Hello, I'm John Torpy. Thank you for subscribing to the Market Analysis Podcast. We appreciate your support.
This is the Friday, November 13, 2020 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. The USDA confirmed what many in the grain belt believed, that there was less crop in the fields and in the bins. The bulls mostly loved the news. For the week, December wheat dropped 9 cents, while the nearby corn contract improved 4 cents. Rationing entered the soybean market lexicon as higher export numbers lightened the stocks-to-use ratio. The January soybean contract jumped 47 cents. December soybean meal increased $5.70 per ton. December cotton contracted 16 cents per hundredweight. In the dairy parlor, December Class 3 milk futures declined 97 cents. A mixed week in the livestock sector. December cattle added $1.28. January feeders grew by $1.95, and the December lean hog contract was even. In the currency markets, U.S. dollar index increased 52 ticks. December crude oil improved $2.95 per barrel. COMEX gold fell $69 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index increased more than 11 points to finish at 364.25. Joining us now to give us some insight are regular market analysts Sue Martin, Sean Hackett. Welcome to the both of you.
Hi, Paul. How are you? Great to be back in the studio.
Good to see you, Sean. Good to see you, Sue, as well. Sean, I want to start with you on wheat. I don't want to call it the loser of the market this week, but there's a sentiment that it might be the canary in the coal mine, in the commodity mine. Is it telling us something?
Well, it's a little bit of a different market winter wheat because we've been running it up on drought in Russia, drought here in the plains, but then it goes into dormancy. And once it goes into dormancy, how do you keep the bulls fed this drought weather market that it had been in? And when you lose that, you bring speculators out of the marketplace. And that's kind of what's been going on with wheat, which, of course, corn and soy have not been driven by weather mostly. It's been the demand from China and obviously from downgrading our supplies here.
All right. So, Sue, the question, though, when it comes to the livestock market, I mean, yes, we were up on feeders. We were up in cattle this week. But is wheat going to gain any strength from, say, a cattle producer looking to supplement more expensive corn and they might be turning to wheat? Does that give it some hope?
I don't think so. I think wheat would have to become cheaper than it is. And basis Chicago wheat on the December contract, I look for support to be around 560 to 575, right in there. If we were to take that 560 area, I would be a little concerned. But I believe that the wheat market longer term is going to be a friendly one. Global supplies are tightening on wheat. However, rice stocks, which counteract with wheat, are tending to increase globally. So when I look at the wheat market, it's kind of a market that's searching for demand right now. And again, I agree with Sean, it's going into dormancy. And come February, March, it'll be more important as to where we stand, as to how dry we really are.
All right. So the question then becomes, if you see better days ahead, are you holding on that market? Or are you selling something right now, Sue?
I think we have a chance to still take this market back up to around 660, basis the Chicago. And I think that when I look at the wheat, you can see the attitude where there's buying of KC over Chicago. Now, that's an old spread that used to always see KC wheat premium, 50, 60 cents premium over the Chicago. And I'm wondering if we are heading back towards a more old-fashioned possibility here. But this market has a little work to do. And in the meantime, of course, you know, corn competing with corn at the moment, you know, we had a pretty bullish report on corn, and then the market gives up. And that's not good indication. So that could help wheat continue to try to be weaker. I think the spreads are changing here.
All right, Sean, do you see any agreement or disagreement there?
I agree totally on the KC wheat premium to Chicago wheat changing. When we look at the weather situation, where it's most egregious is in the, you know, KC winter wheat areas of Russia and the U.S. And when we go into what we think is going to be a hot, dry spring and also winter kill events that could take place, we do think that spread is going to reverse itself. And so there's an opportunity there.
All right, Sue, let's go to the report on the impact of the corn market. Was that a surprise to you for corn, or were you more surprised by soybeans from USDA this week?
I was not surprised that the USDA WASDE lowered feed usage. I was not surprised that they increased the exports. I was surprised at how much NASS lowered the yield. Now, I've always kind of compared this year on corn to the year of 2010-11. And that year was another year where we had corn yields drop from August into September, October, and November. And that year, they dropped again in January. So we may be looking at that same similar situation. I think that corn is in a good demand market. Finally, we had WASDE increase exports to China, and it was long overdue. I'm wondering, there is a tendency for WASDE to overestimate demand, or I should say underestimate demand, in the November report, and in more than not in the last 10 years. So when we come into the final, the market, I think, after this report, was like letting the air out of the balloon. It's like, okay, now what do we look for that's got to be bullish? Well, the only thing you've got going here is South American weather and how late the beans fully get planted. How dry does Argentina remain? Because they're number two, they buy for number two, number three exporter of the world in corn. And the other thing will be as to how, when we get into the turn of the year, how do we, I think the market will pick back up.
Okay.
Because we're looking at a report, and they're going to have that same attitude, will yield drop again?
All right. So, Sean, are there other bullish tendencies out there than what Sue mentioned, or do you see the same?
I mean, there is an air pocket up here. You know, we're not, we've traded Chinese demand. We've traded lowering the U.S. supplies, at least for now. Weather in South America is just not mission critical yet. That comes mission critical in mid-late December. So, and we're coming to year-end, and capital flows and speculative capital likes to sometimes exit to finish off a good year if they've had one. And so it's a time to be careful about a setback here and a pause in the market from a blistering move since August.
All right. I'll ask this question before I get to our Twitter question. Is this a topping signal or is this a pausing signal right now?
We think it's a pausing signal.
Okay.
We don't think this is a major top or the top. We just think it's a pause. It's a time for the market to absorb the move, to kind of let time pass by and reset the bar for another move higher. We're pretty bullish on weather in 2021, and so we think this is a pause to higher levels.
All right, I'll let you both take a crack at this one. Mike in Dyersville wrote us on Facebook. Thank you for that. You can also hit us up on Twitter. Mike says, I sold cash corn 406, thinking the gap in D's futures would get filled. What are the odds of that gap being filled? And now what do you do for re-ownership? Sean?
Well, the most important question is it time to re-own? We don't think it's time to re-own. We think the time to re-own would be sometime in December when we've had a more formidable correction, when the speculative funds have taken some of the profits off. We talked about the COVID. There's talk that we might shut down again. I mean, there's a lot of things that could come in to scare the speculators out of the market. And even though we've had a little bit of a setback in corn, we don't think it's anywhere near enough to say someone should go back in and put risk back on. We just think it's time to wait to do that.
Sue, do you agree?
Well, I tend to agree with Sean. You know, the one thing we noticed was this past week was the, and it's based off of the Commitment of Traders report, the bullish sentiment index reached 90%. The last time it reached that was back in 2012. So it's extremely high. You had the funds as heavy long. Granted, they haven't been long for a very long period of time compared to normal. But that would say you've got to have some caution here. And that could also be another reason why we got that bullish news. And in the same day, we started giving it all up. That's not usually a good sign. Almost leaves it look like we have a double top over us. But we do have an outside range year going. And that opens the door for more possibility as we move into 2021.
All right, Sue, let's move to soybeans here. 4.2% gain. That's a 47-cent gain on the January contract. That's more than 90 cents in 2 weeks. Do we got another 90 cents in the next 2 weeks out there?
I don't think so. I feel that when I look at the beans, we've thrown a lot of bullish news at this market. Now, I'm not going to say that we can't push higher as we move into January. I suspect we will. Right now, China's staying very quiet, and it's because of the uncertainty as to who's going to be president. I think they've got a game plan going for either one, but if you've noticed, Xi Jinping has not reached out to President elect Biden to congratulate him. He's waiting. And I think that when we look at the market here, 90% back, it's estimated 90%, 85 to 90% of the Chinese hog herd is back up to speed. But that says to me, they've got a huge need for corn and soy meal. And so I can't be bearish here. But on the same token, we have to remember we're coming from 780 low on a lead contract of beans in 2019 to not far from the 2016 high being on the January contract of 1182. And Jan contract is now lead contract as of today. So we've had several wave four counts, and 1147 was one. We do have on the January contract a 1203 and a half, 1205 and three quarters. Those are counts that we could meet. But on the same token, this market has had a nice move. It can have a chatter, but when you've got a stocks to usage ratio of around 1.9% to 2%, the market's not going to be able to break down and hold it. I think the end user is going to be ready to cover his needs.
Well, that brings up a good point. I guess, Sean, I use the word rationing to start. I mean, that's not a big widespread discussion at this point. But if I'm somebody sitting on a bunch of soybeans and I've seen 90 cents in 2 weeks, could maybe get, okay, Sue wouldn't take my bait for 90 cents in the next 2 weeks. But you could see what she's laying out going higher. How long do you hold? How long do you keep that bin locked up?
Well, what we've been saying and what we think is the right approach is to make sure that you obviously sell the bushels that you have to sell to keep the farm going. That's so important because there can be a break at any moment in time. You don't want to be in a situation where you got to pay the bills at the next low in the soybeans. Second thing is, if you cannot store your soybeans and you have to go pay commercial storage, we would say those are the bushels we would be looking to take advantage of this rally and cash sell. But we would not look to sell anything beyond that right now, because when Sue was correct in saying when you're that tight, if the weather in South America gets worse, if the U.S. weather gets worse, you know, we could have a wild situation next year, and the bushels in the bin could really be an asset to the farmer this coming season.
And you have to sit here and think, because of the discussion that we had 6 months ago, 8 months ago, we had two ifs out there. If this weather happens or this, we did have two weather events on top of what we had for COVID that may have impacted end user demand, however far you spread that out. So that's something that was there underlying. So the if is possible, but we've also seen the years when the ifs don't come possible.
That's right. I mean, things could go well. Things could go perfect. Things could go perfectly right. And you cannot look a gift horse in the mouth and say, I'm not going to take any action at all. But we would take measured action with the bushels that we described at this point. Mm-hmm. We still think there's likely to be more room to be more aggressive at a later date.
Sue, are you selling more than what your cash needs are right now in soybeans?
No, if you have cash needs right now, we would recommend selling. I go back to the year of 1980, and it was one of those on the analog study that I've talked about repeatedly, that in years when September, when November beans made new contract highs in September, they tended to make higher highs again all the way into November. And of the 8 years out of the last 50 that this occurred, only six of them, well, I shouldn't say only two of them failed from the September high. The other six went on to make higher highs, of course, into November, which we have seen. Out of those five, one of them then peaked. That was the year of 1980, and then the market fell back. Now, I've been saying this year's following 1980's path. However, we have to keep one thing in mind. What we have coming up in front of us that we didn't have back then is the Chinese demand and the phase one agreement. And they are having food inflation. And FAO talked about the food inflation in various categories and the veg oil tight supplies. China's going to not back out on phase one. I don't care who's president. What they will do, especially with the uncertainty that's going on in Brazil and Argentina, where the weather is drier in the center and south, and they aren't catching the nice general rains. Rains are about half of what they would be in measurable amounts. And you're half a month out in ending November. Now you get into December and you've got to start questioning. And I don't think China will cancel and switch cargoes out of the U.S. back to Brazil. I don't think they'll cancel any U.S. cargoes. I think even though they may be a little front-end loaded, there's too much uncertainty in front of us. And I think it's they just have to have a sure thing right now. They can't afford to.
Right. All right. Sean, I before we recorded, I asked you about an acreage battle. Mm. How does cotton shake out in all of this right now? Because is cotton going to be a loser if you are in an area that could plant corn or plant a soybean right now?
I believe it is the loser. Number one, it's not a necessity. So when we're looking in a situation where the global economy is still very rough, discretionary purchases, of which cotton represents, is not a high demand item. And we see demand being an issue there. So we're looking at a soybean situation, like Sue said, demand, rationing potential, very tight supplies, China not looking to take any chances, weather on the table. That market wants to get extra acres to guard against another poor weather year, and cotton has it to give. We are not tight in the cotton market by any stretch of the imagination.
A little play there, but also a little play in the market. So then, Sue, let's move to livestock in the sense of the cattle business. We've talked about the input costs that some of these feeders. We also talk about what that end user is, what the consumer's looking for at the grocery store. Which one wins out in the cattle market right now?
Well, for one thing, in the cattle market, we have been pushing end users, or, you know, feeders, to be locking up their feed needs through June of next year, probably even into July of next year for corn. We feel that if you get a corn futures contract down to 380, it's a gift. We think that long-term, we've looked at years ending in a one, and there are many times that the market will rally into, now I'm not saying higher highs or anything like that, I'm just talking very generically, where do the highs come in, where do the lows come in? And the highs tend to be May, June, more so not May, June, July, and August. And I think we're looking at, if you come into, our weather sources are telling us ahead that we're going to see a cool spring next year. And then we'll see where we're at with production. But the market's going to be very tenuous, especially when you have a producer that is aggressively sold in beans in the U.S., 80%. You have the farmer sold about, well, Data Grow said 53%. Ag Rural says 65%. And that's an aggressive sold position when you're looking at soybeans. Then you look at that crop that has to get planted and out so they can get the Safrinha corn in. Well, there's another situation that's going on in corn, and it's called the sugar cane. Sugar cane production in Brazil is expected to be down. And it's also expected to be down in India. Those are your two largest producers in the world. And that could mean with Brazil's ambitious usage for ethanol, they could have to maybe switch away from sugarcane and use corn. They're going to be tight supply.
All right. I need to get, Sean, your take real quick on cattle. I answered more of a feeder question, but cattle market. Going into today, 11 to 12 days up. Bubble popping?
I mean, we got a very, very strong smart money algorithm buy signal a few weeks back that we alerted our customers to make cash purchases, and we've had this big, big rally. We have started to falter at resistance here, so probably the market is set up for a pause like we talked about, but it still looks to us like we could work our way higher into the end of the year before any more damage could be done.
So up this week in beef, hogs even, but it has an upside. It's been having an upside. Is that continuing?
The hog market, we feel very differently about. The whole basis upon the hog market was that the Chinese were going to buy record amounts of pork, which they have, but now their supplies are rapidly growing in China. Their prices are falling, and we think we're looking at peak exports to China for pork. And so that says to us that we need to be careful about our U.S. hog price, because if we lose a lot of that demand that we've been counting on, there's no one readily available to take it up. And our smart money algorithm has turned quite a bit bearish here in the last month. And prices have started to set back. And so we're very much cautious. And we think hog producers need to be making sure they get some cash priced here and don't look a gift horse in the mouth that we've had a pretty good run. So,
Sue, you get about 15 seconds on hogs like normal. Do you agree with Sean?
No.
No, good.
I'm very friendly to hogs. I think that the break we're getting, and by the way, hogs closed one tick higher for the week, one tick, but, and if they take out this week's low of 63.60, that'll be disappointing, but you get them up through 67.60 on the December contract. And I think it opens the door to take out the highs. I believe that when I look at my long-term data, it's turned positive. I have to be bullish. I just think demand is off of the report.
All right, Sue. Well, I want to hear more about this in Market Plus. Thank you. That's Sue Martin. That's Sean Hackett. Thank you both for sitting in today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That will do it for this installment of Market to Market, but we will keep the conversation going in our online-only segment that we call Market Plus. You can find it on our website of markettomarket.org. Going back to school never goes out of style. We continually update our Market to Market classroom project. We've collaborated with vocational agriculture teachers to help with the basics of commodities, government, and the history of agriculture. Visit markettomarket.org/classroom to go back to school. Next week, we'll look at how rural, urban, and downstream parties have joined together through an innovative nutrient exchange program. Thanks for watching. Have a great week.